Let's begin. I'm Terry Thornton. I'm curator of education here at the Modern, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday evenings at the Modern. Tonight, we are fortunate to have Martin Gayford here from Cambridge, England. After studying philosophy at Cambridge and art history at the University of London's Courtauld Institute, Martin has had a distinguished career as a writer and critic, writing prolifically about art and music and jazz in particular. Contributing regularly to the Daily Telegraph, various art magazines, and exhibition catalogs, Martin was art critic of The Spectator until 2002, as well as The Sunday Telegraph, and he is currently chief art critic for Bloomberg News. Where recent articles and reviews, I think, are interesting because I think they give us a sense of Martin's range. The ones I saw as I was looking through, for example, most recently, they range from a report on the current Turner Prize exhibition at Tate Britain, which is actually quite entertaining, Martin's writing on that, to an upcropping of the Mona Lisa, to a piece titled Coon's Basketball Meets Drunken Hercules, which is a piece about the exhibition Bronze at the Royal Academy. In addition, Martin has written numerous books, including The Yellow House, Van Gogh, Gauguin, and Nine Turbulent Weeks in Provence, which was met with critical acclaim in this country as well as in Britain in 2008, and has to date been translated into 5 languages. Also, the intriguing Constable in Love, as well as John Constable Portraits, an exhibition catalog for the exhibition of the same name, which Martin, who by all accounts is also a curator, co-curated with Anne Lyles in 2009 for the National Portrait Gallery in London. And most recently, his book, On David Hockney, A Bigger Message, Conversations with David Hockney, which was published last year, 2011. Of course, we all know Martin Gayford to be the man with a blue scarf, the subject of Lucian Freud's compelling painting currently found in Gallery 7 in Lucian Freud Portraits, which is, of course, the Modern's current exhibition. I'm certain that everyone here tonight is also aware that the experience of sitting for that remarkable portrait is the subject of Martin Gayford's 2010 book, Man with a Blue Scarf, on sitting for a portrait by Lucian Freud, which I hope you purchased tonight or earlier from the Modern's bookstore and had the opportunity to have a sign by Martin at the book signing just prior to the lecture. Of course, that brings us to Martin's having graciously agreed to come all this way to share his observations, insights, and experiences of that extended exchange with Lucian Freud for this Tuesday evening's presentation. I know you're as anxious to get to it as I am, so please join me in welcoming Martin Gayford.
Well, thank you, Terry. Thank you all for coming. It's great to see you here. I'm really enjoying my first visit to Fort Worth, Dallas. Never been here before. It's not my first visit to Texas. What we're looking at here is Lucian's palette as it sat on a stool beside the window in the summer of 2010. I just saw it. I was in the studio visiting him and looking at actually the last picture in the exhibition, Portrait of the Hound. He popped out of the room and I just saw that looking there, very pretty on the chair. So I snapped it with my iPhone. It's the only photograph by me you'll see in this lecture this evening. All the rest of our David Dawson. I've included it partly since Lucian died last year as a sort of exactly a tribute, is a memory of him. Almost the first thing he said to me when I met him, one of his earlier confessions was that he'd worked out what his last picture was going to be. He described the subject. It was going to be his palette, abandoned, thrown in the corner of the studio amongst the rags lying there. Well, that sort of thing is very difficult to organise, especially if you're, especially if your pictures can take up to a year to paint. So he never got round to painting his last picture. However, this is a sort of substitute for it. And also it introduces what you might call a chromatic anecdote. That is a little story about colour, which I'm going to tell you to introduce my talk this evening, and it concerns this, my prop, which I've brought. I'd like to go back to, I suppose it was about the middle of April 2004, at which point I'd been sitting for 6 months, 1, 2, 3 nights a week, always wearing the same clothes, a pink shirt, tweed jacket, this scarf, and in all that time, Lucien had painted nothing of the blue scarf at all. Because, as I'll explain more about his method later on, but the painting was slowly expanding from a central point, and when you were a sitter for Lucien, actually any progress you greeted with enthusiasm. So, you know, you'd think, oh, great, he started on the collar. Or, you know, tiny developments were encouraging. And it had been announced at the previous sitting that he was about to start on the blue scarf. So this was a big moment, especially as the blue is a slightly unusual colour in his palette. Lucien did not like bright and beautiful colours. Every painter has their own characteristic gamut of colours. So a colour which would be completely standard in the palette of, I don't know, Hockney or Matisse was very, very unusual in Lucien's palette. He would actually say, for example, the reason why he didn't take drugs, he would say, is he'd heard that taking drugs made you see beautiful colours. And he'd say, I don't want to see beautiful colours. I want to see the same colours all the time. This, however, accepted it as part of the picture, but he would say, sort of reflectively, I don't like beautiful colours, but that is a beautiful colour. So, anyway, it was an exciting moment, and I sat there, and Lucien, after revving himself up to start the sitting, he mixed one consignment of blue and advanced to the canvas, looked at me, advanced to the canvas. No, that wasn't right. Mixed up another lot. Same thing happened 2, 3, 4 times. Eventually he said, I've obviously gone mad. It's me. I just can't paint this blue this evening. I'll do something else. So he spent the rest of the evening painting a bit of sort of brown air above my head. I went home. I live outside London, about 60 miles away in a town called Cambridge, so I always had a journey after the sitting. I went home and I told this strange occurrence to my wife, and she said, which blue scarf were you wearing? And I said, what? And she said, you do know you've got two blue scarves, don't you? And I said, no. Nobody's ever told me that. I had no idea that I had two blue scarves. It transpired that I had this one. This has been checked by my wife. This is the correct one. Before I put it in the suitcase to bring it. And another one, which is just about half a tone darker. It's got a bit of black in it. And somehow, for 6 months, I'd managed to get this one out of the drawer and bring it to every sitting. And for the crucial evening, I'd put the wrong one on. So I digested this information. I decided that probably the best thing was not to mention it to the artist for the time being. So I put on the right blue scarf and went back the next week, and Lucien started painting the blue scarf, and everything was absolutely fine. I've told this story before to audiences, and a couple of times ago, somebody afterwards said, well, what would have happened if your wife hadn't known about that scarf? Would the picture actually have just stopped at that point? And I think it might have done. And the point I want to extract, let's have a look at the picture, is that I think this is a remarkable example of the artist's eye and how it works. Because what I deduce must have happened is that for all those 6 months while Lucien was painting my face, which looked at the time like a mosaic of khaki, oatmeal, lime green, all sorts of unexpected colours, which all actually were knocked back as soon as the blue went in. He had in mind this precise shade of blue, so they were all keyed to this blue. Consequently, when I turned up wearing the wrong colour, it threw him completely, which I think is, is an interesting... I wouldn't have guessed that an artist would operate quite like that, but actually other painters have told me, yes, that is exactly what it's like. That's perfectly plausible. So, at this point, I'm going to track back a bit to explain a bit about how I came to be in this position, predicament, or have this wonderful opportunity, depending on how you choose to look at it, of sitting for Lucien Freud for all those months, wearing the scarf and the tweed jacket and so forth. I had met him about 8 years before. He sent me a postcard, which is quite a rare item, because one thing Lucien didn't do very much was write. Consequently, anyone writing his biography is going to be up against a considerable difficulty in finding evidence, because I've seen his correspondence. It reads, in not joined up letters, would you like to meet for lunch next Wednesday, that kind of thing. Anyway, I got one of those postcards. He'd read something that I'd written, and so we met for lunch, and everything went fine, and we seemed to get on, and we got into a rhythm of every month or two he'd invite me out or say, well, I'd like to come and look at his new picture or something like that. And after a while, in an attempt to return this hospitality, I started inviting him out as, I suppose you'd have to say, my date. To music concerts. As Terry said, I was the jazz critic of a London newspaper at the time. And when you're a music critic, you always get two tickets. So previously, I'd just put my notebook down on the spare seat or something like that. But I thought, well, actually, Lucien really likes certain kinds of jazz, so I could invite him along. So I took him to... We saw some very good things, actually. I took him to see Wynton Marsalis and Cassandra Wilson, and we went to see Ray Charles at the Festival Hall. And Lucien always had a distinctive... his reaction. For example, Ray Charles, tremendous evening, great big band. Ray Charles in very good form. He stopped the whole concert and had a row with the sound man halfway through. Very exciting. We walked out, and Lucien said, he really knows how to wear clothes, doesn't he? So, Lucien was very interested. I mean, he painted a lot of naked people. He was pretty interested in the way people were dressed as well and how it reflected their personality. So, Ray Charles and his jacket and his trousers had been what Lucien had been focusing on for the whole evening. And this went on and on. And at the back of my mind, I began to formulate the idea that it would be a very interesting thing to sit, to be a subject for one of his paintings. But it took me years to get round to raising the subject because it seemed a bit slightly embarrassing and look at me, what about me, sort of thing. And so one afternoon at the end of 2003, I think it was October, I was sitting in his kitchen having tea. And I somehow managed to pluck up the courage, and I rather pessimistically I said something, hesitant, probably along the lines of, if you thought I would be an interesting subject, I think I'd be able to find the time to come along for the sittings. And I expected he'd say, that's a nice idea, maybe one of these days we could do that. And instead he said, excellent, what are you doing next Tuesday evening? And so, bang, I was almost immediately locked into that position, in that chair. That's the setup for the picture. Just say a few things about how it worked technically. The first thing we did on the very first evening was Lucien got down on his hands and knees and drew chalk marks around the legs of that chair as soon as we'd fixed my position. And every evening for the next 8 months, for every sitting, the first thing we did was crawl around on the floor trying to find these chalk marks, which became increasingly difficult, as you can imagine, so we could fix the position of the seat, which fixed my position, because the crucial thing was that the easel and the chair with me in it and the light, which you can just about see the edge of it at the top of that slide, but there was a 500 watt halogen bulb above the easel, and that had to be in the same relative position as well. And the other thing was, it always had to happen at night by artificial light, because there's a distinction which you might not notice just walking through an exhibition such as this marvelous exhibition here, which is that Lucien's paintings were all distinguished according to the time of day they were done, because light was very important. If a painting started as a morning picture, it always had to carry on as a morning picture. Afternoon picture, same. A night picture done by artificial light, completely impossible for him to put a stroke of paint on the canvas except at night. So that was one thing. Well, I was also introduced early on to the idea that that by which he meant me and him, are here to help it. I.e. there are three of us in the studio, and the most important one is the painting. I'll just give you this unfinished picture of Francis Bacon from about 1958 gives you an idea of how a Freud developed, which he had a method which was certainly unusual. Another leading figurative painter has described it to me as completely crazy, but that's maybe going a bit far. But Lucien, a lot of figurative painters would start with a sort of sketchy overall beginning, and then things would slowly get into focus. Lucien tended to start with a blob in the middle of the picture. Or on the first evening, what he did was do a charcoal drawing on the canvas. You can just about see there the vestiges of the charcoal drawing he was following there. So first evening, he drew my head on the canvas. Next time, he got out the palette and the mixed up a blob of flesh colour and started in the middle of my forehead. And for the following 4 or 5 months, the paint slowly moved out from my forehead, so that the blob was the beginning of November. By Christmas, there were two eyebrows and a pair of eyes and a nose looking out from the canvas. My wife came and had a look at it. We went out and had dinner together with Lucien, and she looked at the picture first and she said, it looks like you. I said, how can you possibly tell? It's just, anyway. So he had this odd method that the painting slowly advanced from the middle. And as you can see in his last unfinished picture of the Portrait of the Hound, which is in this show, when a picture was getting close to being finished, he'd just have a few corners of unpainted canvas around the edges, which he liked to keep, just as a sign to him that the thing wasn't finished yet. And when all the canvas was gone, covered by paint, that was a good sign that you were within, at any rate, a month or so of finishing the picture. So here's this is the the sitter's point of view, so to speak. That's pretty much what I saw, except that this was taken by David Dawson, who was posing at the time with a dog sitting on his lap, in the hot summer of 2006. And so Lucien had his shirt off, but usually he was wearing the shirt. But otherwise, the extraordinary array of brushes looking like the feathers of a bird sticking out of jars all over the studio, piles of squeezed, half-squeezed paint tubes, which he spent a lot of time searching through, looking for exactly the right tube that he wanted, exactly the right brush. And mysteriously, they never seemed to dry up. And at night, the brushes didn't get dry, and the paint was always used. But there were certain rituals which left marks on the room. The room, the studio, he had two studios he worked in at that time. The one I was sitting in was on the first floor, in English terms, that sort of upstairs, in his house in Kensington, which was a perfectly preserved house built in 1750. And Lucien had done very little to it. Some of the rooms where he lived were rather beautifully, sparely decorated. This room, he just moved in and used his studio. And he did what he always did in his studios, which is every time he cleaned his palette with a palette knife, he would clean it off and whack it on the wall. So that arrangement of paint in the background, which looks a little bit like an abstract Tachiste painting, which might have been painted, say, in Paris in 1956, is in fact, although rather beautiful, completely accidental. I'll say just a word about Lucien's career prior to all this, how he ended up in the studio. He was born on the 8th of December 1922 in Berlin. He was the grandson of Sigmund Freud. His father was Ernst Freud, Sigmund Freud's second son, and he was the second son of Ernst, in fact. And he grew up until he was about 10 in Weimar, Germany. So he swapped the cigarette cards, if anyone here can remember those, and toy soldiers in the Potsdamer Platz, the old Potsdamer Platz, and fell through the ice in the Tiergarten one day when he was skating, he told me, which very characteristically, instead of remembering as a terrifying ordeal, he described as rather exciting. Anyway, so his family, prudently, as soon as the Nazi regime came to power, almost instantly felt that things were becoming very dangerous and left. So they arrived in London in 1933, with all their possessions, and effected quite a sort of easy transition, although a bit of a culture shock, I imagine. And Lucien went consequently to a succession of English public, what we call public schools, which means, in fact, private schools, from almost all of which he was expelled for one reason or another. At Bryanston, which was the last school he went to in Dorset, he... near Bournemouth, he, among other things, arranged for the local fox hunt to ride through the school dining hall. So something which I didn't discover, actually, he didn't tell me. Anyway, he was a bit of a handful, in fact, as a teenager, and only wanted to be a painter. So he, at 16, he set about studying art full-time, and... consequently, he had an amazingly long career as an artist. The first painting in his 2002 Tate retrospective was dated 1939. The last unfinished picture, 2011. That's, what, 72 years of painting, an awful lot of which he spent looking at live human, sometimes animal, models. So... I mean, there are other epic careers in art, you know, Picasso, Michelangelo, Titian. There are people who carried on doing it for a very long time. I think it's possible nobody else spent quite as long as Lucian did looking at human skin and flesh and faces and trying to translate them into paint. And he quite early on developed a rather unique method or attitude to the whole thing, which he described in a magazine article in 1954, so pretty well a lifetime ago, which, among other things, he said that it was important for the artist to keep the subject under observation all the time, 24 hours a day, if possible, so that the artist could discover everything about the subject, and from that totality of information, then extract what was useful for the picture. Sounds a little bit unnerving, that, but in practice, I'm showing you this early picture of strawberries. Goodness knows how he got soft fruit to pose for long enough to one of his pictures. But anyway, he had a lot of trouble with food. Eggs were easier. I'm showing you this because, in practice, what that observation meant was that it was absolutely compulsory and not much of a pain or a penance that for the sitter to go out to one of the best restaurants in London after the sitting so that Lucian could continue his observation. And also before, when I arrived at 6, the first thing we'd do is have a chat. Lucian would probably have a cup of tea at that stage, didn't drink before working. I might have a glass of wine. So we'd have a little bit of conversational interchange before the sitting began. And all the time, the idea was he could look at the sitter behaving, their features moving naturally. Because, I mean, sitting in a chair with your head cocked at just this angle is not a very natural activity. So he wanted to see as many different possible expressions which might be included in the work as he possibly could. So an example, about 7 months into this epic, I remember we were sitting in an Italian restaurant near Marble Arch, and he was quiet for a while. So I said, what are you thinking about? And he said, your left ear. So, of course, I wasn't the only sitter at the time. He had quite a schedule of sittings. I had colleagues, one of whom was this grey gelding mare, which was one of two horse subjects he had at the time, which his assistant David Dawson, who I believe has come here and spoken, had discovered in a stables in Wormwood Scrubs, which is a remote region of West London, in a stables run for some reason that I've never quite understood by nuns. But anyway, Lucian was able to work there quietly, and several mornings a week while he, at the beginning of when he was painting me, he would start off by painting the horses. There was also a skewbald mare, and this is the grey gelding, that I've got it right way around there. Consequently, he would often be very cold November, December, January. When I arrived, the first thing is he'd say is he was feeling a bit rough because he'd got frozen in the stables in the morning. And then usually, because I think work was sort of tonic for him, as he started painting, he'd start looking better. And David Hockney made the observation, Lucian looks younger when he's working. So this was a man whose work had a sort of positive feedback effect on him. There were the two horses. I'll come back to the skewbald mare in a moment. There's a connection between her and me. In the afternoons, the girl with fuzzy hair sometimes sat. And concerning her, there was a sort of warning or what had happened in her case indicated one of the potential pitfalls of a sitter for Lucian Freud, which is that she had sat for about 4 or 5 works, none of which had come to completion except this etching.